Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's another beautiful day to be alive. You're listening to Let's Go There on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. Happy Thursday. We're almost there.
Oh, we're almost there, and we're almost close to the weekend, which is wonderful.
And I appreciate you. I was going to call you out. Because I love when you're working and you're sick, and like I'm usually sinusy, but you are winning the sinus award.
I am winning the sinus award, and as soon as the mic's turned on, I'm like literally all
copping
the names.
Up a loogie.
Yeah, like I'm that type where I'm just over here sucking on my mucus.
Okay, talking about turning off potential listeners.
Well, I can't help it. It's not like we you know, I don't want to call off because I'm sick. I want to come in and
we are real.
Have a moment with you guys and just show you all that I'm dedicated to this line of work.
Yeah,
I'm
you
doing.
Are. I mean, I used to when I was younger, so I'm the type that has like, oh my God, this is such a weird topic to start the show on.
You did.
I have post-nasal drip. Like, it's a known thing. Do you know what that is?
No, what
Google
is that?
It. And if you have it, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. Is that a neti pot thing where you put it in your
nose? I should be using that, but I don't. So I just thought, like, I'm a Jew. I was born with sinus issues. I'm blaming it on my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and my mom too. Actually, both of them. And so it is. A Jew thing. I'll just blame it on the Jews. And it's not, I do not have a messed up nose. FYI, I have a beautiful nose and I've never gotten surgery before. So this has nothing to do with the size or shape of my nose.
I love that we're starting Let's Go There with all the Jewish stereotypes.
But I could do it because I'm a Jew. Just as, like, you could do it with your community.
Nope.
You don't
I'm not
ever
doing
make fun of your community?
Never.
Okay, I'll just
what
make fun
community
of Jews.
Is that? The gay one?
You have two communities.
Oh my God, I do. I'm black and I'm gay. What's new, guys?
So, anyway, on that note, we're feeling good today. I think we have a sense of humor. We're having fun. I'm feeling it. Our cue of the day. So let's get into what's happening, okay? Our question of the day is, are you ready to drop your last name in a modern marriage?
Ooh.
You can always give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. And maybe you're already married and you like made that decision.
Yeah.
Who took the last name and how did you, you know, decide that?
Honestly, especially because when we were thinking about this question, I was like, how does that even work for same-sex couples as well? Because I'm looking to get married and I don't know if I want to take my partner's, you know, that future partner, whoever that is, because right now I'm single and lonely. But, you know, whoever that is in the future, I don't know if I want to take their last name. So, I don't know. Call us in and let us know.
And we have a very special guest joining us in studio, author and comedian Gabby Dunn, here to talk all about money. And we're also going to talk about some other fun stuff.
Right, because she's a lesbian.
She is.
And she has the cutest little girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her.
She's also a Jew. FYI, actually, she has an amazing story about being from an Orthodox Jewish family and coming to terms with her sexuality.
So, word of the day, and if you are in a very responsible place and you can drink, take a shot every time Shira says something about being a Jew.
Okay. Hey, I'll take the game. Our Let's Go There topic of the day is, should you stay celibate till you tie the knot? This is, of course, inspired by Hailey and Justin Bieber, who I knew some of you might follow, some of you might not care at all.
Hate
but
them.
They're on the cover of, what magazine again?
Vogue,
okay? Vogue. They're on the cover of Vogue, and they revealed, this is really interesting, that they were celibate until they tied the knots. I don't know what I think about that.
I mean, here's the thing. The kids nowadays are just all doing these crazy things. But it's actually a very interesting concept and conversation about being celibate before marriage that I want to give my thoughts once we get there. I feel like we can have some very good combos.
Including from, you know, Bieber's known as one of them. He's a sexual creature.
Yeah, for sure, you know? I have seen those nudes.
Have you?
Yeah, oh my God. When they like dropped on the internet, okay. For sure.
Now it's time for what's trending in the news. Now, Nancy Pelosi has been making the social media rounds this week after the State of the Union address and her clapback meme. But now she's also making news after throwing some serious shade at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. Joining us to talk more about this is our political and pop culture journalist, Jared Hill. Welcome back.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Yeah, great. It's nice to have you here for this story. And now this is an interesting one. I guess, do you think it's shade that Nancy Pelosi is throwing to AOC, or is it just, you know, good old fashioned fun?
I don't think it was really all that shady. I mean, I think she knows what she's doing, but I don't think she was really throwing shade at AOC. The quote that came from Nancy Pelosi when she was asked about the Green New Deal, there were two things that she said. The first one was that it will be one of several or maybe many suggestions that we receive, the Green Dream or whatever they call it. Nobody knows what it is, but they're for it, right?
That was
kind of shady. But then the second statement that came from her was a little bit more clarifying and less shady. And she said, quite frankly, I haven't seen it, but I do know that it's enthusiastic. And we welcome all the enthusiasm that's out there. I'm very excited about it all, and I welcome the Green New Deal and any other proposals. So this is one of those things where AOC and a lot of other congressional Democrats have come out with a bold plan that is asking for a lot that, you know, is probably not going to end up the way that they're proposing it. But it's a big ask, and it's something that's going to be really important.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that I kind of been saying about Alexandria, how she's really going in full force. And even though I love that in hindsight, but I think she's stepping on a lot of toes here. And I think she's not realizing that because she's so passionate about what she's, you know, trying to kind of uncover the blanket on what's really kind of going on in this administration or just in government issues anyway. I think, you know, people are kind of like, girl, you have to chill out. You have to relax. And so I don't know. I think, you know, Nancy was a little bit, it seemed like it was intentional the way she kind of said it when she said, you know, the Green Dream or whatever they call it. I think she's like, girl, we've been doing this. We get these suggestions all the time.
So, yeah, Jared, I wanted to get some context from you because this is this new AOC Green New Deal. But isn't this something that the Democrats, Pelosi, has been pushing for a while? And so why is it this new thing?
Yeah, so this is kind of something that there's been a lot of discussion about. But first, to Ryan's point, I do think that she is asking for a lot. But I think if we look at AOC the way that we looked at Bernie Sanders in the 2016 campaign, Bernie Sanders, while he didn't make it, he definitely pulled the party a lot further to the left than they started out. And if nothing else, AOC can probably accomplish that, even if she doesn't get everything that she's asking for. To Shira's question, what she's asking for, the Green New Deal asks for a lot of different things, but the main tenets are a few things. One, a transition of 100% renewable energy over the course of the next 10 years, which is a huge, huge ask already. Number two, they want to make sure that they can employ all people who want to work in averting the climate crisis, which is another very broad stroke, a big ask, and it's very nonspecific with details on that. And then the third thing is an assurance of racial and economic equity and justice. A lot of the times when we talk about climate change, there's an element that tends to get left out of environmental justice, the way that we deal with our climate, the way we deal with our environment, the way that we deal with where we build plants and where we put, you know, landfills and all of those things and how they disproportionately tend to affect lower income communities, Black and brown communities. So the language of the New Deal, I tweeted it out. It's very, very specific, but it has a lot of conversation in it about gender, about justice, about equity, about race and ethnicity, about the poor and the homeless. So it's very bold.
Again, Jared Hill joining us right now, pop culture and political journalist. Now, I guess because I don't think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was like literally or deliberately going against Nancy Pelosi or trying to throw shade even at her in doing this. But like, why wouldn't she ever acknowledge that this is something, or has she, that Pelosi and the Democrats have been fighting for? And is there a way that, you know, this might create a rift?
I don't think it's actually creating much of a rift between AOC and Nancy Pelosi, because there are a lot of Democrats who are signed on to this, who are in the House and on the Senate side. And so I think it is kind of a look ahead to what we'll be discussing when we're talking about 2020 candidates and what a Democratic platform is probably going to look like. Will the platform look like this? I'm not sure. But I mean, to be fair, all of the climate scientists have said that we have about 12 years to make a significant shift before we kind of cross the red line of no return with our climate crises. So this requesting something to happen within the next 2 years actually puts us in the next 10 years, kind of puts us in line to be able to make that mark, if you will, if asking for 10 years. So, yeah.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, what she's doing and bringing this into, obviously, the conversation is very smart and it needs to be talked about. But I do also think kind of Nancy, at the end of the day, I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a national platform. I mean, she has the followers. She's kind of the influencer of this, you know, this current kind of administration in some way. And I think at the end of the day, Nancy's just like, girl, you're still a junior member. And it takes steps to get there. And I kind of enjoyed that in some way. I think, you know, Nancy's like, we're going to get there when we get there.
Maybe we're creating drama, Ryan. You and
no!
I. You're like, Jared's like, I don't think it's really
I don't think there's any hardcore drama, but I do think there's, like, you can't just come into your job and you're very new and you're kind of very green in some ways in some sort. And like, oh, I'm going to go and talk to the CEO of, like, you know, the entire company. No, there's like baby steps to this. You have to kind of play the game.
First of all, I want to address the pun of you calling her very green. I see what you did there, even if you don't.
I'm a political analyst. But second,
I think it's important to have these kinds of debates. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if AOC and Nancy were kind of coordinating on this. I think it's important to have a healthy debate on both sides of the spectrum, if you will, to be able to say, this is what we want and this is what we have, and you know, this is kind of the extreme. I think what AOC does for the party is being able to say, like, we want everything. And then the party can come back and kind of moderate down and says, okay, we can't do everything, but we can do this. And that helps to pull things out that we wouldn't have ordinarily gotten if we had stayed towards the center.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, Jared Hill, thank you so much again for joining us. As always, you're awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're jumping into afternoon tea, top stories in pop culture and entertainment. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, honey, we have a lot to get down to in afternoon tea, so I hope you're ready to sip, because you won't believe what celebrity is defending Liam Neeson after his racially controversial comments. But first, let's talk about how fashion is being problematic once again. So Gucci is apologized and discontinued selling a sweater that social media user says resembles blackface because of its design. Now, if you haven't seen it, if you've been kind of a hermit crab and you haven't looked on the interwebs recently, Gucci decided to release this really expensive sweater that basically the top, which is no longer on the company's website, is a black turtleneck sweater that pulls up over the bottom half of the face with a cutout and oversized red lips around the mouth, basically. So it's an all black sweater and it has these super big red lips that is known to, you know, remind us of history of minstrel shows and basically blackface.
Yeah, I thought it looked more like a hostage situation. That's where I went to first. I was like, oh, this is what hostage or guys that, or women, people that go into places and try to.
Well, you are white, so of course it didn't. Blackface doesn't connect with you, which I'm very happy.
Well, my first thing was like a bank, like, you know, when they put things over your head.
Oh, I see, like a
That's
ski
what I meant.
Mask.
Ski mask. That's what I meant. I looked at it more as a ski mask, but instead of just having the separate mask, it's part of your turtleneck.
Well, here's the thing. I think we are in the year 2019, and we've had situations like, I believe, and we actually talked about it on our show with Prada when they came out with those little monkeys. Remember those little monkeys that had the big red lips, and everyone called them out for being racist?
Don't do anything with black and red lips.
Like big red exaggerated lips. It looks, especially covering up your mouth, and you have this pale, no shade to all my pale sisters, not sisters, because, well, you know, my pale white women out there, no shade to y'all, but in this model was very pale, and she had this super dark black turtleneck. wig covering half of her face, and it looked like it was blackface. It was very weird. People on Twitter was like, at this point, Gucci is playing in our face, but y'all still gonna shop. Happy Black History Month. Also, someone says, if you hire more black people and cultivate an environment where people on all levels of the company feel comfortable to speak up, incidents like this would not happen. Which is very true. It's one of those things where I feel like we continue to see in fashion, you know, this obviously led moment of like, girl, why, at this point, this can't be an accident. You can't just say that, oh, we just didn't know. And Gucci, of course, released an apology saying, Gucci deeply apologizes for the offensive caused by the wool balaclava jumper, which is what they call the sweater. We can confirm that the item has been immediately removed from our online store and all physical stores. We consider diversity to be a fundamental value to be fully upheld and respected and at the forefront of every decision we make. We are fully committed to increasing diversity through our organization and turning the incident into a powerful learning moment for the Gucci team and beyond. Seriously. So during Black History Month of all months, you gonna release this $860 sweater?
I mean, I'm surprised. Do they
that
not
looks like
have,
blackface?
Yeah, like, do these people have focus groups? I mean, these are multi-gazillion dollar organizations.
And that's the thing.
Doesn't make sense.
I have a career before, obviously, me working in entertainment and fashion. And fashion is not a very inclusive space. It's not one of those things where they're going to, you know, have black people or, you know, people of color in these high-level workrooms where
they're
comfortable.
That's your generalization. You don't know. Gucci could have someone.
They don't. Clearly, they don't.
I want to ask.
My thing is, if they do, then those people don't feel comfortable enough to speak up, which is a problem.
Or they thought it was that mask that people wear. What's it called?
I'm telling you, black people know when they see blackface.
Okay. I'm just wondering.
Black people know when they see blackface. And if it's something offensive, I'm looking at this and I'm actually like, yeah, this is a little yikes. Like, this is not okay. And it's one of those things where it's very offensive to see this in 2019.
I agree. I have a question. If it was gray, a gray sweater, would it have made a difference?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah,
honestly,
like, or a red sweater.
Yeah,
it just
but the
was
fact
the black,
that this was a dark black sweater on this, you know, like I said, pale white girl, and the lips are there. It's just very weird. It's a very weird design. I think when you come to fashion and all these, you know, there's some moment just because it has a label on it, doesn't mean it can't be called ugly.
Oh, yeah, totally.
This is hideous. Oh. I don't know whose thought process was this. And I'm sorry, this is just not an accident in 2019. People need to... There's been so many conversations about race and, you know, blackface and all these things, especially with the governor out in Virginia and all these things. It's like, I'm sorry. Is it not clicking for white people what blackface is? I'm just confused.
Ryan, I have an idea.
What?
You shouldn't share it on national radio because someone could take it from us.
No, give me your
idea.
We
should create... like an influencer focus group where that fashion companies pay us to test out and like to sign off on campaigns before they put it out.
Okay. I mean,
you
I don't
make
hate
some
it.
Money on that.
I like it, but I'm also I'm so over trying to educate people on what, I mean,
why
honestly,
not? Make money off the education.
No one should be dumb enough to know, like, you know what blackface looks like. You know when something can be looked at as offensive, and because they had nobody in that room that was just like, oh, I don't know if you really want to do that, then, you know, there's a problem.
There's a way to make money off of this. Might as well take advantage and try to teach people a lesson.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about how this actress is defending Liam Neeson after those very intense comments coming up in 7 minutes. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Chira and Ryan on the new channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are continuing with our afternoon tea, top stories in pop culture and entertainment. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, so, girl, let's just say some people shouldn't give their input. And when I say people, I mean actress Michelle Rodriguez giving her thoughts on her Widows co-star Liam Neeson's racist comments. Let's get into this.
Okay.
So, you know, Michelle Rodriguez is certain that her Widows co-star Liam Neeson is not racist. And especially to give some backstory, if you guys missed in our earlier shows this week, we were talking about how Liam was kind of getting some backlash after saying he was wanting to seek revenge after finding out a close friend of his was raped by a black man, and he actually went out to find, you know, random black people to harm and kill, you know, no big deal. Well, actually, you know, Rodriguez, Michelle Rodriguez, in this, you know, movie Widows. Have you seen that movie with Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting theme, like, movie that I saw the trailer for that I really want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess she was kind of asked about it at the Amfar Gala in New York, and she said this. She said, it's all effing BS. Liam Neeson is not a racist. Dude, have you watched Widow? His tongue was so far down Viola Davis' throat, you can't tell him he's a racist ever. Racists don't make out with the race that they hate, especially in the way he does with his tongue so deep down her throat. I don't care how good of an actor you are. It's all BS. Ignore it. He's not a racist. He's a loving man. It's all lies.
So I feel like you could say he's not racist without saying all that stuff, because we all know that way back, I mean, you know, way back when the stories you hear of, like, people that had they would all well, you know, like old movies we watch about people that were slave owners.
Of course.
We all know that there was assault and all this horrible stuff. So don't act like you can't, you know.
And I think this was a clear case of you saying, like, someone saying, yeah, I have a black friend, so I can't be racist. That's what that is. And a lot of people actually kind of agreed with that kind of, that weird association that she tried to say.
Like hooking up, that you could hook up and kiss someone and not.
Someone says, someone please inform Michelle, racists don't make out with people that they hate. Rodriguez said, Rodriguez about the colonization of female bodies during war and slavery.
Oh, so I was right.
Come on.
Okay, my history was right.
Someone else said his
tongue.
So basically she said, you know what? No, I can't even read any more responses, because here's the thing. First of all, Liam was acting. You know, he was doing his job. So, of course, if he has to kiss someone of another color, that's a part of his job. That's his moneymaker. So I'm pretty sure he can put his racist beliefs deeper inside of him and kind of just ignore that, you know, guess what? I'm kissing a black woman right now. Honestly, I just feel like her input, no one even asked for it. So why is she giving it?
And she, of course, notices the moments like a hot, beautiful black woman is being made out with, because Michelle is also, I don't know.
But it was
of course,
just a
that's
weird...
me saying, because Michelle's like a lesbian, that she would notice like the hot black chick being made out with.
Yeah,
by
but
Liam
it was
Neeson.
Just a weird, it was just so weird for her to say, well, he can't be racist because he kissed his black co-star.
Okay.
Like, of course that makes sense.
So let's
How does that happen?
Let's both say what we would have rather Michelle say.
Nothing at all. I would have listened.
Okay.
This is what I would have wanted to hear. I'm going to play it right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Michelle.
No, I'm going to play it right now.
Oh.
Here we go. You ready?
I was going to ask you.
You ready? This is the sound that I only wanted to hear coming from Michelle's mouth. Silence. That's exactly what I hear. I don't want to hear anything else from her.
Okay, do it with me.
Okay.
Oh, you have to ask, like, you're the reporter. All right,
so Michelle, what did you think of Liam's, you know, radical comments this past weekend?
So listen, I know Liam well. I've acted alongside him with him. We're friends.
Okay.
Friendly. I don't have a cell phone or anything.
Okay.
But I know he's not a racist.
Oh.
I know he's not a racist. Do I think that was the best way to reply, or like that he needed to share that? No. And I would hope that he would answer that question in a different way, but that's how he answered it. But he is not a racist.
Okay. Well, thank you, Michelle. Have a great day.
Did I just like add fuel to the fire?
Yeah, I hated that answer.
I need some PR training.
You need some media training. And I think the actual, you know, lesson here is just don't put your input in if you have nothing else to say. And honestly, the way she was like cussing, there was a lot of cuss words. And clearly, because the Amfar Gala is very, it's a part of Fashion Week, and it's very, you know, there's probably a lot of cocktails flowing around. Maybe she had one too many.
Oh, yeah.
And she just shouldn't be giving her input. I honestly, I get you wanting to stick up for your co-star.
But it's like so if something between you and I happened,
girl,
and then someone asked you at a thing, wouldn't you be like, trust me, she's not, but you wouldn't say
no,
she made out or
this
did
is
things.
What I would say. If there's a bus, Shira Lazar is under it.
Good
no
to know.
Comment.
Now I have it on audio if anything happens. It's recorded.
Well, if you want to know more stories like that from Afternoon Tea and more, go check out WeAreChannelQ.com and the Radio.com app.
We are back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are so excited for our next guest.
Oh, my God.
Really our first guest of the show today.
Yeah,
and really
her.
Our only real, like, hardcore superstar guest. Please welcome comedian and author Gabby Don, who has a new book out, Bad With Money. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course, Gabby. You know you're welcome here anytime.
No, that's very nice of you.
See, I want to see you in person because you are so fun. Like, your energy is, really just bright and bubbly. But then also you have this, dry, dark humor to you, too.
Thank you. I hope that comes across in the book.
So tell people, you're obviously an author now. You weren't always an author, although you've always written. So let's just go back a bit because, I met you when you were writing for a site called Daily Dot. Then you even worked for What's Trending, which I feel like I'll always mention that because that's my claim to fame that I worked with you at a certain point.
She's like, I know her.
And then you were at BuzzFeed where I feel like that kind of broke you to the next level. And then you, after that, talk about your channel and then how that led you to working more with, I guess, creating content around money.
Yeah. Before we worked at BuzzFeed, I had a YouTube channel with my YouTube partner, Allison Raskin. That was a comedy channel / kind of advice, although we're bad at advice. We worked at BuzzFeed, and then I was always kind of doing content around LGBTQ issues and sexuality. And in 2016, I wrote an article called Get Rich or Die Vlogging, which was about YouTubers with day jobs and how none of us make any money anymore. And that kind of cracked shit open. Cracked stuff open. People were just really aghast about it because they had no idea that YouTubers had day jobs. Mm-hmm. And so it was a huge thing. And so when I was approached to do a podcast, I was they thought maybe I would do something about sexuality, but I was no, I want to do something about money, because that is a thing that I had been thinking about a lot, because I wasn't making a lot of it, and I always had come from a family that was lower middle class, and I was I just cry about money all the time. Mm. So how is everybody else living? Because I'm just crying.
and
we started the podcast. Yeah. Just for me to share how much I was crying all the time.
See, and I love that. I love how relatable that is because a lot of times, when you're known as this influencer, people feel like you're just handed everything and you're making all this money. And sometimes that is the case. But honestly, a lot of times we're just trying to make our dreams happen and we're just we're poor.
And get paid for what we love doing, which is there's also this idea working. What was that meme I shared where it's but this is great.
You can, you'll work for you being
not
added,
free,
exposure.
But exposure. You're my rent is thousands of exposures to pay my rent.
Exposure is the worst. So I was just having a lot of trouble with money, and I always had trouble with money, and I never learned anything from my parents, which is huge. Your parents should teach you stuff, but some of us aren't lucky enough to have that.
Definitely.
So then I was just like, I want to talk to people about money because it's seen as this big taboo thing. So I had guests on to talk to them about money. And then season two kind of got more political because the election had happened. And so we did, we talked more about immigration, and we talked about medical marijuana, and we talked about medical debt, and we talked about what to do if you're totally screwed, identity theft or disability, if you have a mental illness. So we really tried to dive into, stuff that a lot of money shows don't really take into account, how racism affects credit cards and loans and, just these things that I don't think are taken into account by a lot of money gurus who just want to give you advice where they yell at you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, when we come back, we're talking to Gabby Dunn right now, comedian and author, and her new book is called Bad with Money, The Imperfect Art of Getting Your Financial S-Word Together, is out right now. And we want to get some more tips from you and also talk more about, you're a member of the community and just how you've built your brand and continue to grow. So keep listening to Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on Channel Q. We are continuing our convo with author and comedian Gabby Dunn, who has a new book out, Bad With Money, The Imperfect Art of Getting Your Financial Stuff Together. And it's out now. By stuff, it's another word. We just can't say it on the radio because we're official.
It's a much funner word.
Yes, exactly.
thank you.
I have a question. When it comes to this book, of course, and I love that, one, you are a millennial talking about this, because I feel like a lot of times millennials, we are living in kind of this scarcity mode, and finances can create so much anxiety. What is something maybe from your book that you can, you know, give advice on when it comes to dealing with that anxiety that circles around finances?
I mean, I think you just have to push through it, unfortunately. I mean, everything that I do, I cry during it.
Ooh, so relatable.
I made a budget, but I laid on the floor for an hour before I did it and was very upset. I did a thing where I printed out my bank statements for the last year, and I went through them with a highlighter and just like looked at what I was spending on and what I thought I could do without. And I'm not talking about like a sweeping sort of latte factor. I'm talking about like seeing what you personally are spending too much on that doesn't make sense to you, or what you could, like, you know, just like, oh, why did I spend $600 on Amazon? Why am I doing that?
Yeah.
Or I realized I was paying too much for parking and I didn't like that. So
that's
it's
like
little
scariest
things that are specific to you.
Yeah.
I swear I have moments where I don't even want to look into my bank account.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, I don't want to see
horrible
it today.
Right?
Oh, everything is horrible. You go, I don't need that negativity in my life. No.
Totally. And what's the balance between being in that, like, where you want to be responsible but not being in scarcity mode and having an abundant mindset? Like, I'm gonna do what I want. And, you know, like, for me, sometimes my rule is I'll spend that and that means I'll make more money.
I know. And I do that too, where I spend, you know, I think I'm not coming at the book from like an aspirational place. I'm coming at it from a relatable place. So I still do that. I mean, I still spend money that I know is coming in, but I don't have yet. I still like freak out and try to like just, I mean, I think just from my past, even if I'm okay with money, I'll still be like, I gotta sell everything I own. Like, I think you still kind of get in these habits, unfortunately. The big thing that's changed since I wrote the book was that I do have a retirement, which is like amazing. And if that's the only thing that comes from the book, great. But I also still have student loans. I still have credit cards. Like, it's not the best.
Yeah, like, what's one, I guess, what, did you have to go into doing research? Like, did you meet with financial advisors to kind of help you figure out what you wanted to talk about in this book?
Yeah, I did a bunch of research. I have an accountant, so I talked to him. I record all my conversations with him so that I can listen to them back, because I don't understand what he's saying in the moment. So that's a good tip, is like, I really don't try to like nod and be like, yes, I understand what you're saying when you don't. I really just, I record them and then I go, I'm going to look up some words later. Good luck, Dan, with being my accountant.
Yeah. Especially
it's fun for you.
Especially with tax season around the corner. I feel like doing your taxes, I honestly get, and thank you so much to, and they're not a sponsor, but the TurboTax, honey, if it wasn't for them, I don't even know if I would be doing my taxes. Because it's so,
I have to, I definitely would go into H&R Block and just dump an accordion folder on a lady's desk and be like, help!
Gabby Dunn again is joining us right now, author and comedian. So obviously this has become a big part of your brand, but like, it's not the only thing that your brand is about, because I feel like you're very honest about, as you've mentioned, your life and your sexuality. So I guess what else are you continuing to share?
Yeah, Allison and I have a sequel to our YA novel that we wrote in 2017 that comes out in July. And that's like, you know, there's two characters that are loosely based on us. So her character, you know, has OCD as she does in real life. And my character is, you know, bisexual as I am in real life, or queer. And so her relationships are sort of very casually. There's no like coming out drama. She's a very casual bisexual, which I enjoy.
I would like that.
There's other narratives to be told.
Yeah.
So that's coming out in July. But yeah, I mean, I still, the book, Bad with Money, the best compliment has been people saying that it's like a very queer book, which I appreciate.
Yeah, because that's what I was wondering. Is there something in your book when you talk about kind of handling finances with your partner, your significant other?
Yeah, I mean, both me and my partner are cis women, so if we want to have a baby, that's a whole thing. And like,
she's so
definitely
cute,
different. Oh, I know, she's the best looking person I've ever seen. It's a disaster.
Aww, I can't stop it.
And then I have to like make more money so this relationship makes sense, basically. But I think that every day. But I talk about a lot of social justice issues, like retirement is never marketed to LGBTQ people. Mm. I mean, have you ever seen a retirement commercial with a queer couple? No.
That's
so
true.
It's very strange that we're kind of shut out of these long-term plans. And I don't know if it's because people just don't, I mean, it's like left over from the 80s where people just think we're not going to live that long. I'm not sure. It's pretty dark.
Yeah, it is dark.
I talk about gay marriage and the ways that we're spending on weddings now, which we might not have done in the past.
Yeah.
So the book I'm queer, so I'm not going to write about these topics without like mentioning my own life. And one of the things in the book that I talk about, I talk about dating and how when I'm dating a more butch woman, the waiter will hand her the check. And I did a poll on Twitter for the book saying, how many people does that happen to? And like most people were like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
Yeah,
that
totally
is interesting.
Weird. Like, I hate, not to relate that to your situation, but that happens when I went to, like, go out to dinner with my mom. They always give me the check, and I'm just like, whoa, that's gross. Give it to her. That's, like, feminism.
Yeah, you're
don't
like,
be rude.
She's definitely paying.
Yeah.
I feel like, I was going to say, obviously, when I go with guys, they give it to them.
No.
But
yeah.
And then I'll be
so
paying
weird.
Sometimes because it's a work thing, and I go, actually, you could give it to me, and then they feel really bad.
I'm all about empowering a woman that's about to pay for me. So, shout out to you.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. Well, Gabby Dunn, thank you so much for joining us today. And we hope to have you back in the studio because I would love to have you back to talk about also just like your general perspectives about, being in the community, your relationship, because you and your partner are superstars and they're very beautiful.
Thanks.
On social media. But in the meantime, go check out Gabby Dunn's new book, Bad With Money, The Imperfect Art of Getting Your Financial Stuff Together, out now, right now. And yeah, you're always welcome back for your next book, too. You keep on putting out books, it seems.
I know, it's wild. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Now, before we get into our Let's Go There topic of the day, which is, I'll just tease, should you stay celibate till you tie the knot? Yes, we're going there. I want to talk about Valentine's Day next week. How will you be celebrating? Well, I'll give you an idea of what to do. Channel Q and the world famous Abby present Loveline's Valentine Hookup. That's happening with Dr. Chris, broadcasting live from the Abbey on Valentine's Day, answering your questions on sex, love, dating, and relationships, February 14th. So if you're in the Southern California area on Valentine's Day and looking for a good time, or just some great love advice, join us for a night full of prizes, specialty drinks, and more starting at 5 p.m. Pacific. So there you go. And Loveline is 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific there that day.
Which we will have Dr. Chris on later on our show to talk more about it.
Why are you laughing?
Because I accidentally hit, so in radio we have a button called the dump button, and I thought it was a cough button. I actually hit the dump button. So they may have not heard half of that. The love line thing. So I am so sorry.
Why do you have to ruin my love promotion?
Because I hate
You're ruining
love.
Valentine's Day for all of us, Ryan. Okay, let's get into our Let's Go There topic of the day. Should you stay celibate till you tie the knot? This was inspired by something that we recently found out. Justin Bieber. All right, so Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin are together. They got married. And they revealed in this Vogue interview some really intimate details that they actually remained celibate until they got married, which I'm very surprised about because I look at Justin as, this...
A sexual being.
I just like, well, there's been lots of headlines that came out before he decided to settle down.
For sure.
Of him, he got around because he was hot to what's it called?
I mean, he's hot to somebody, but I just
honestly...
Well,
he
honestly...
was just like, you know, obviously, he was like, you know, he grew up in front of everyone. He has a lot of fans.
He was a heartthrob. That's what you call a heartthrob. And I think it's one of those things where, one, I already feel like Justin Bieber and Hailey Bieber, this relationship is such a weird one, and it really just throws me off guard because I will forever ship Justin and Selena Gomez.
Okay. Well, besides that, no, I agree, but I think what surprised me was this. And there's two sides to this. One, I think it's really interesting because he does have so many female fans for them to be like, maybe this can be possible for me. I don't need to just like give up my sexuality myself for a guy.
Okay.
It sets a new precedent. But at the same time, it's interesting. He says this in Vogue, citing religious commitment. God doesn't ask us not to have sex for him because he wants rules and stuff. He's like, I'm trying to protect you from hurt and pain. I think sex can cause a lot of pain. Sometimes people have sex because they don't feel good enough, because they lack self-worth. Women do that, and guys do that. I wanted to rededicate myself to God in that way because I really felt it was better for the condition of my soul, and I believe that God blessed me with Haley. As a result, there are perks. You get rewarded for good behavior. So that, I just wanted to, you know, set the
first of all, I hate that
context.
He said that. No, first of all, being celibate is not, you know, quote-unquote good behavior, but there is somebody actually on the line that it's a friend
yes.
of our, and well, actually has been on the show.
Yeah, Amber J. Lawson, who is a friend. She also has something called The Goddess Process, which is all about self-empowerment.
Right.
And Amber J. was celibate for 18 months, so welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So I almost fell off my seat when I heard that they were celibate.
Right?
It's so gross.
That is not fair. So Amber J., you know, hearing now that obviously, you know, he came from more of a religious side of things, what was your reason for going celibate?
Well, my reason for going celibate is I went on a transformational journey. And you know the old saying, if you want a different result, stop doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
So what? Your result was just stop having sex?
Well, yeah. What was sex to you?
I mean,
was it just like, was it bad?
So, no, sex to me was a way to create intimacy. I didn't understand that intimacy, or I hadn't experienced that. I hadn't learned in my life experience that actually vulnerability and connection is where true love, deep, connected, and hot-ass sex can come from. Oh, wait.
You can say yes.
Yeah, you can say that.
You can say yes.
Okay.
So, so you went. You decided to take 18 months off, and then, I guess, how did you...
Well, it wasn't...
What?
It wasn't a set amount of time. It was really about, I was on this exploration, and I didn't want sex to cloud my judgment.
Okay, I can agree with that. Would you ever do that, like, once you find the person that you get engaged with and you guys are kind of going through it, would you ever be, I guess, I don't know, celibate with them until the day you guys got married?
I think I would be actually open to that. However, I'm a sexual being, and I am at an age where I don't have any sexual hang-ups anymore.
Yeah.
All that stuff from my teenage years or youth I have let go of, and I want to get freaky. So, like,
don't suppress
that. The other side so we can do all the stuff.
I agree. And like, I'm not surprised why they got married so quickly, because they obviously wanted to get it done. They're ready for the shimmy, shimmy, bang, bang.
Hashtag truth.
Okay, Amber J. Lawson, well, thank you so much. This was a quickie. But thank you so much for joining us today for our Let's Go There topic of the day.
Yes, and let's go there, goddesses.
Continuing with our Let's Go There topic of the day, should you stay celibate till you tie the knot? And we actually have a caller right now.
Oh, we do?
Yes, hello.
Slay.
Who's on the line?
Hello, how are you?
Hi, good.
This is Ryan.
Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Guess what? I'm Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Double Ryan. God. Okay. So tell us about your experience with celibacy. And are you waiting till you tie the knot? Is that what your story is?
No, that's not my story. My I'm 18 months celibate now.
Okay.
And I never expected to be celibate in my adult life. I'm actually going through a divorce, and that's the reason why.
Oh.
So, yeah. And so things got really choppy there at the end, and I myself am an addict. And so when I hit my bottom, for about 5 months leading up to that, my wife and I were not having sex.
Mm-hmm.
It was really bad. And then when I hit that bottom, I went into rehab, and then I was in a sober living. So I've been in recovery this whole time. And they tell you when you're in recovery not to be in a relationship for that first year.
Yeah.
And so I followed those rules, and here I am. It's like 18 months later. I'm celibate, and I never expected it. And yet, I'm very happy that I am. And so now I'm voluntarily celibate-ish. Mm.
So what is it like? Have you really even noticed the difference of, like, I guess, look? Because when you're not celibate, you're obviously like, oh, well, anything's down, or maybe you're looking for sex. But if now, mm-hmm. If it's not a part of your everyday, do you even think about it as much, or has the urge, you know, continued?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, in the beginning, lust was really difficult to manage.
Mm.
You know, it was out of control. And it truly was lust. It was just like this visceral need to satisfy my urges. But
word of the day, by the way.
The
word of the day was visceral.
Visceral. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
That was a good word.
It is a good word. Yeah. It's a visceral word.
Mm.
And so, you know, once I moved past that, there's actually an immense amount of power and integrity that I'm finding in celibacy, especially as a man. You know, we're taught when we grow up as men and boys that the number of notches in your belt is, you know, what defines you as a man, and you're bragging to your friends.
Mm.
And, you know, the pickup artists teach you that they call it closing. You know, did you close her? Did you get laid? And that entire paradigm, that whole way of thinking about manhood and masculinity mm-hmm. has really flipped on me in this process, because now I'm kind of like, you know, I must protect my, I must protect my celibacy, but it's not really celibacy. It's like, I must protect my integrity. I'm not just going to kind of whore myself out as a man, which is what I've done in the past, sort of like being a slave to this definition of masculinity, which I didn't define.
Ooh, you should write a book, Ryan.
Thank you.
You might be the better Ryan on this show right now. I feel like you're coming from my spot. You're so well spoken.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're very right. I think it's one of those things, especially, you know, as a man, you deal with that where you're all automatically, and kind of your first thoughts about sex are automatically kind of put on this poll of, like, how many have you already slept with? Like, how many people have you slept with already? It's like you're checking off to make sure you're winning in the race.
And how are you connecting with other people then? Are you learning new ways to connect?
Yeah, I think it's actually easier to connect with other people. I'm finding that sort of like when I would be in the presence of a really beautiful woman, for instance, in the past, I would get really like tight. I would react to her. Like that would be my reality. I would be reacting to her, and I would be like, there, you know, because I'm attracted to her and I don't know what to do with that energy.
Okay.
And so now it's like I look at everyone as brothers and sisters. Of course, I'm still attracted to people. But because I'm coming at it from more of like, I am the prize because I love me first more than anyone else.
Yes.
And so I don't have that codependent sort of like, I'm looking for someone else to complete me type thing happening. And so from that place, I can just be like, hey, you know what? If no one paid attention to me in here, I'm still happy. And that's new for me.
Well, do you also think, okay, here's the
thing. That's really beautiful, by the way.
I mean, that is very beautiful. But here's my thoughts on this whole celibacy thing.
Yeah.
So I think I understand why people do it, but also I feel like, don't you want to kind of try out, you know, who you're possibly, like, the sexual chemistry between that person? Because what if you end up getting married and it's just not there, and then you're kind of like, well, what do I do? And I know you kind of have to learn about your partner, you know, when it comes to that anyway. But I think sexual chemistry is very important. Any type of chemistry is very important. And that, and you wait all the way until then, it's like, did you waste your time?
That's a great question, too. And, you know, I didn't wait before I got married. I was very sexually active. But again, I'll go back to this sort of idea of pouring myself out. It's really like codependence. And relying on sex in order to build the intimacy, I think, is backwards. And so as I go forward in building relationships with others, I don't feel that need to have sex immediately. So my intention will be to build intimacy, which ultimately is hot. Yeah. I mean, that's a turn on. Like, I want to pump up the buying temperature, you know, on both sides before we engage in that first sort of sexual act, because then it's just going to be like, great.
Ba-ba-boom.
It's
going to
be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ba-ba-boom. I mean, good conversation, all that. I mean, I have to admit, so, and I've talked about kind of my thoughts on things in the past sexually.
Yeah.
And I feel like people think I'm this like well, I am a sexual creature, but I must say my life has always been the least complicated or more simple when I took that pressure or that focus off of sex or getting attention from people, or when I started just focusing on me and working on myself are the times that when I get more done and just the universe starts working in different ways. Like, it's just more simple and there's more flow for some reason. Literally, it always happens when I take that focus on someone else out of the picture. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Wow. Well,
have you guys heard of orgasmic meditation?
Wait, can we go to that after this? Wait. All right, hold on. We're going to take a break. All right, Ryan is our caller right now, but we're gonna continue to have you on, and we're going to talk about...
Ask our Q of day,
yeah,
too. We should. I want
right,
to know.
And after the break, we're going to talk about orgasmic meditation. Don't go anywhere. Okay, we are back. We're going to get into our Q of the day in just a moment, but we're wrapping up our Let's Go There topic, which was all about staying celibate before you tie the knot, or just reasons to stay celibate in general. And we've gotten some amazing calls and different perspectives. Ryan called in and we were about to end the call with him, and then he brought up orgasmic meditation. I was like, hold up, I need to hear about that before we say goodbye.
Which, can we acknowledge the song that was playing?
Nothing
Taylor
like
Swift. Taylor Swift was literally playing when we were about to talk about orgasmic meditation. It was hilarious. Sorry. I just like
timing.
Yep.
So just, Ryan, before we wrap up this topic, what is orgasmic meditation? And just be careful, because we can't talk about certain things on this the way you,
keep
I don't
it
know.
PG.
Keep it PG.
Yeah, keep it PG. So orgasmic meditation is a structured, goalless way to be intimate with someone. Okay. And so it involves manual stimulation of the clitoris.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
You can't say that word.
I mean, unless he's a doctor. He might be a doctor.
Are you a doctor? I don't know. So it's manual stimulation. So it's stimulating certain things down there. Okay, got it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And it's goalless. And so it's in a really structured environment. It's 15 minutes. And whatever happens, happens. And it's a meditative process. And I think this is a really good way in order to build intimacy without actually just diving into kind of a structureless sex.
Okay, that's what you mean by it. Wow. Where it's like there's always a goal, but I don't get how can you take the goal out of it?
I mean, here's the thing. I know,
well, through structure.
Okay.
I love that we have tons of straight listeners, but this is...
No, but it's not just for straight listeners. It's for everyone, Ryan. That's not fair.
No, I love it, but I mean, do I really...
I'm sure you could do it the other way, too.
Yes.
You gotta give both perspectives.
Yeah, well, the idea is that, you know, one person is creating a structure where it's saying, hey, it's okay for us to not, like, reach some goal. And so we say, okay, well, let's spend 15 minutes together exploring each other.
Yeah.
And regardless of what happens at the end of that 15 minutes, it's over. And then we can decide what we want to do after that. If we want to actually have sex after that, then that's fine.
It's like a pregame. It's a structured pregame, which I appreciate, because these days, people out there are very selfish. And we have a quick attention span these days. It's like squirrel. Anyway, so thank you, Ryan. We've really appreciated you having you on. And something to Google, orgasmic meditation, and to learn more about. I hope to have you back on.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Okay. So what do you, Ryan?
Ryan was a freak.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm talking about you. Ryan was not a freak. That is one. You know what Dr. Chris would
say? First of all, being a freak is okay. There's nothing wrong with being a freak.
Dr. Chris would say, don't judge someone that's looking at things outside the box, because I appreciate that.
There was no judging. I just said he was a freak. I loved it.
I don't think doing something different is not freakish. Being normal is a freak.
Being a freak is a good thing. You know that, right?
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
I know it's an urban term for you. You might not be familiar.
I hate you. Okay, our cue of the day is happening right now. Our question of the day. Hope you're enjoying this back and forth. Our cue of the day is this. Are you ready to drop your last name in a modern marriage? Wow, we really went from one place to another.
Yeah, we did.
Are you ready to get your freak on and drop your last name in a modern marriage?
That's not how you use it, but all right.
So give us a call right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That number is 833-772-2557. Our question of the day is, are you ready to drop your last name in a modern marriage? We always are inspired by something. This was inspired by celebrities Priyanka Chopra. She shares that she took Nick Jonas's last name.
Oh, so she's Priyanka Jonas now.
Yeah, not as cool.
No.
I feel like it was, she legitimately is a big star that has her own name. And we were saying, she did the hyphenated. So it's Priyanka Chopra Jonas.
I like
Or is
that.
It Jonas Chopra?
It's Chopra Jonas.
Because like, if you want to keep your last name, would your last name end it versus?
No, if you're hyphenating, it's always your maiden name and then your new name.
Okay, got it.
Like Kardashian West.
Got it. Mm. So I guess what are your thoughts on that? I feel like it's hard this day and age also because of social media and your Google history. You know, people have Googled your name and like and are following you, although you could change your social media accounts these days.
But like Hailey Bieber did.
Yeah. But then, but that's like a celebrity. Like if you're just marrying a regular, is there a point of taking the name? Whereas a celebrity, I was saying if it's a big name, like a known amazing name that you're proud of. I don't know. Maybe that's superficial. Maybe you would take it.
I mean, yeah, if there was a name.
Like if Michael B. Jordan wanted to marry you, Ryan, would you take?
Honey, he can take that and more. And we actually have a caller who's on the line.
Joan. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh. Have fun.
Who is this?
Wait, who's on the line? What's your name?
I'm Shalise.
Shalise.
Oh, hey, Shalise. So what are your thoughts on our question of the day? Would you drop your last name for, I guess, if you're in a marriage or if you're getting married?
So I guess my answer is it's a little bit complicated.
Oh.
It usually would be a yes if their name is better than mine.
That's what I said. Exactly. Well, no, I said more important.
It's more of an idea of what you want to be called. See, my last name is Coons. And
oh yeah, you need to take somebody's
name.
That's
there, Ryan.
That's why I'm like I need to take someone's name because you know it's not spelt like you know. Like
yeah,
because
you're.
It actually means noble advisor in German.
I love that.
Well, in America, that's really racist. It's a racial slur.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I had a teacher. He would call everyone by their last names, but he wouldn't call on me. Not if I wanted a question or anything. He just wouldn't call on me because I had a racist last name.
Ryan is like freaking out here in studio. But no, you probably are traumatized because you were probably bullied a lot. It's actually really sad.
I would just tell people, like, hey, you know, that's, you know, it means noble advisor. It's not spelled the same. So it's kind of like night and night, you know? It's like that.
Yeah, that's a terrible way to grow up, in all honesty. I'm really sorry.
So
if someone has a name that is not going to, you know, have caused problems, then I would definitely take it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Obviously.
Yeah. Are you dating anyone now? Are you with anyone now? Are you ready to do it?
Oh, I'm dating around right now. I feel like I came from Utah where everyone is just going to get married and do that. And I need a break from that.
Good for you.
Well, shout out to you, girl. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening and calling in.
Yeah.
And despite your last name, we love you.
We do.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Have a good night.
Oh, I can't help it. I fell out. That was like hilarious.
Yes. Our cue of the day, our question of the day. Are you ready to drop your last name in a modern marriage? Give us a call right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. So with me.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, my mom's last name, her maiden name is Gross.
So you would have been Shira Gross?
Well, her maiden name.
Well, if she would have never, I mean.
Gross, yeah, Gross Lazar. No.
Yeah.
So like that, I mean, growing up, I feel like she was definitely made fun of.
I would have made fun of you.
She was made fun of. So
she was?
She probably, I mean, hello.
Yeah, with a last name like that.
Gross?
Yeah.
Carrie Gross? I mean, you're gross. Like, that's horrible.
It's so bad.
And now, even in my current partnership, not my boyfriend right now, his last name is my dad's ex-wife's last name.
Oh, wow.
So
the joke is,
and I bump into her, is like, I'm dating someone who, my dad was married to a baker, and I'm dating a baker.
Yeah, that's a little weird. That would have been like, oh, so how does that work,
I guess? Well, yeah, do I want to take that? And yeah, I agree, it's like a cool last name. Like, yeah. I think I would do the... Maybe the legally I would change it, but yeah. I don't know if publicly I would.
See, I've been blessed with the beautiful name Ryan Mitchell.
My name is awesome too. I want to keep it. Shira Lazar.
Exactly, and also my mom's last name, like her maiden name, is very interesting. It's like McMath, and so it's like I'm super happy that I wasn't Ryan McMath. But either way, where I've come far in my career, and especially where I feel like I'm going to go by the time I want to get married, I want to hyphenate. There's just no way some man is going to come into my life and be like, well, it's beautiful that he wants me to have his last name, but sis, it's not going to happen. You'll get a hyphen, and you better deal with it.
Yeah, I hear you. And I mean...
Because it's so dated. Don't you think that like that way of thinking is very dated?
Yeah, that's why I think the hyphen works, but I do believe that everyone wants to keep everyone's last name, and it is unfair that all the men pass it on. Right.
Yeah.
There's something about the men, so it's like it continues to maintain this men have more power.
Yeah, and I was always wondered this as well, like same sex marriages. Like, so when I have my partner, who's taking whose last name?
Well, guess what? We have someone that might help you answer that question.
How cute.
Stephen Petro, journalist and author, one of his 5 books. He writes a lot of books, is called Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners. He's joining us after this. Question of the day, are you ready to drop your last name in a modern marriage? And everyone has a very fun response about this, it seems. Well, we've got an expert joining us, Stephen Petro, journalist and author, who has a book called Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners. Welcome to the show. Oh.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, welcome. So
hi.
Tell us about, you know, your thoughts on this topic.
Well, I'll start off in a little bit of a personal way because I got married to my husband probably about 5 years ago now, and we went through this conversation, should one of us take the other's name, and we each decided in the end to keep our own names, and I was really glad because now I am one of the gay divorcees that populate this country. So
congratulations.
yeah, thank you. So it just kind of raises the fact that there are a lot of issues involved in deciding whether to keep your name, hyphenate it, create a new name, or take your spouse's name. And I have to say, though, I'm seeing more and more same-sex couples taking the name of one spouse or the other. So it's really interesting to see how it's mirroring mainstream heteronormative ways.
But who makes that decision? Like it always goes back, I guess, in heteros, it's like the man, obviously. In other relationships, is the more manly person in the relationship?
You know, I haven't
the better
that.
Last that's name.
Always, like that's always, you know, the more manly is hard to, or the more feminine, whatever, whichever way you want to go. But a lot of times it's like this is an easier name. I like this name better, or I never like my name.
Yeah,
or I never like my family, and I don't want to. I don't want to keep that name.
Oh,
and a lot of it has to do with okay, we're thinking of having children. What last name do we want them to have? Mm. And so all these factors kind of, you know, play a role.
Well, do you think they're even? Because for me, in my opinion, I've always thought about hyphenating. And do you think that can maybe add cause a rift in the relationship if your partner really wants you to take their last name, but you just kind of refuse?
So, I often write about my own family. So I have two examples here. The first one is my brother is straight, and he has been married to his wife probably for 30-some years. She kept her family name. In the beginning, he was like, "Don't you love me?" Mm. And yes, she loved him, but her identity, our identities, are tied up in our names. And they've been happily married all that time, but she has her own name. Everyone else in their family has my brother's last name, though, so that's their two kids. So, it definitely was an issue. Then my sister, she's a lesbian, and she's been married to her wife for about the same period of time, and they hyphenated both of their names. And they are the Petro Cohens.
Oh, that's cute.
I love that.
And, when they were kind of coming up with that, they tried all these different variations, and they came up with that. And one of their daughters, though, says as soon as she gets married, she's going to drop the hyphenate because it's so long.
That's true. You do have to think about
it's so long.
I think me personally, when I have kids, we would just pick a last name. But because you have to think about when they're like testing and they have to fill out forms, like you want your last name to fit. You don't have to hyphenate everything. Like that's a process.
That's what they've learned. And it's really hard to get the hyphen when you're filling out forms. I've heard all of this.
Yeah. And what are people supposed to do for Instagram and social media?
Which is, of course, the most important thing, right?
I mean, people are getting social media for their babies when they're, like, just in the womb.
True.
Oh, I know. Well, I know we're not talking about babies and kids, but one of the gifts I like to give when a newborn comes around and we know the name is to try to get the URL for that baby so that they can be, they can have the .com version of their name.
Holy mother.
That's a lot. You're already putting so much on that baby, saying they're going to have their own website. Woo!
Again. It's just a placeholder. They can sell it later.
Oh, yeah. Use it to. Hey, that's where your college fund's coming from. Stephen Petro. Stephen Petro, again, journalist and author who has an opinion column at USA Today and also a book, Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, is joining us for our Q of the Day. We also got some responses on social media. So, Ryan, want to share those?
Yeah, I do. But I actually have a quick question. In your article, you talked about creating a new name. What is that process like? Like, do you just like put together both names and create this weird, like, infused name?
So I'm going to go back to my sister and her wife. So I told you their hyphenated name is Petro Cohen.
Yeah.
But they went through this process of trying to think of a new name. And one of the final contenders was this word, Petroan, and it was kind of this amalgamation. And
oh, Petroan.
So I'm usually Petroan, and I'm usually like the sensitive, inclusive brother. And I said, "I'm sorry, that's ugly." And my brother, my straight brother, he said, "If that name makes you feel more like a family, then you should choose it." And my brother was right.
Yeah.
They didn't go that direction, but Petroan
does sound like it was a spell in Harry Potter, but
or
I really enjoy
like
it.
Like an alcohol brand.
Yeah.
Like, or,
it sounds expensive.
Gasoline. Petroan. My whole life.
But then it also goes back to, our last names are so part of our history and our ancestors, and it's like, are our kids going to be able to track things back if we're all mixing up the names?
True.
Well, it's a good point, and, names are so such an important part of our identity.
Yeah.
And, to go a little bit far afield, but like when we think about trans people and their names, their new names, they are so important to this identity. And we forget that there's symbolism in names and, there's family. So, it's not a change to be done lightly. And it's also complicated. You have to fill out various forms for marriage, some new social security, new passport. There's a lot of stuff. And, so It's just something to take into consideration when you're making a choice.
A lot to think about because I might want mine to be like unicorn or something. Shira unicorn.
No, right. I'm going to take a thank you.
Shira corn.
No, I'm sorry. If it makes you feel more like a family, that's great.
Okay, exactly.
I have to learn that lesson.
Well, Stephen Petro, thanks so much for joining us today again. Check him out. He's a journalist and author, and his book, Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, is out right now. One of his 5 books.
Yes.
Coming up.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Coming up, we're going to be going to your social media answers, and Dr. Chris from Loveline is in the building, so stay tuned. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Hope you're having a good one. We definitely are. This has been a fun show. And I have a freaking, oh my God. We've all been sick, and so in the break, I put a lozenge in my mouth, and I almost forgot I had that in.
Why would you do that? You were on a show.
I don't know. I'm used to multitasking. So we are continuing with some social media answers to our cue of the day, which was all about taking someone's last name. Are you willing to do that? Or who takes the last name in a modern marriage? So what were some of the social media answers, right?
So Rebecca said, I changed my last name in my first marriage and felt like I lost a part of myself. Second marriage, I kept my name.
Oh.
Rob says, our life is compiled of our decisions. Being a Latino, we have this thing with having 2 last names, but I gave my wife the option to keep her last name or take mine. She decided to be my wife to share my name. Nicole,
that's not the only reason why she decided to be your wife.
True. And Nicole said, I feel it's more like adding him to me, not dropping something. I'm always going to be my dad's daughter no matter what, but then I get to be daddy's daughter, and so better half. Oh,
okay.
Well, hello, honey. You better do that. And then someone else says, haven't gone by my birth name since a court order changed it at an early age. Change it to what you want. Leave it to what you want. It's just a string of letters someone else feels sentimental about.
Okay. Cool. I love all the perspectives. We have a very diverse crowd of listeners.
We sure did. Also, someone else said, really quick, this is interesting. Someone says, hell yes. Listen, I'm all down for the kitty cat power, but I love that crap. I can't wait to take my man's last name and give that name to our kids. That, to me, is a part of what's being a family is.
Very nice.
That's so cute. Dr. Chris from Loveline, what are your thoughts?
Who is now here. Welcome
to
the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
of course. So great to meet you two.
So what are your thoughts on our cue of the day, which is about taking someone's last name in marriage? Are you into that? What's your perspective?
It's an adorable old school way of ownership. And that's what it's really born out of, right? So marriage and exchanging names is born out of sexism and patriarchy and men trying to take control over women and having to ask their father if they can have them and to give them away. So a lot of people are kind of moving away from that. And so it's really powerful when some people are moving into the feminist movement and they're saying, my husband can take my name or I'm keeping my name. But I support some of the people that still find value in the old ways, but as long as they understand what's born out of. But I personally would want to keep my name and I'd want them to keep their name. I don't know that I need like a legal name change to validate my relationship.
Yeah.
It's a lot of paperwork.
It's true.
Yeah. I'm into hyphenating.
I tend to agree. And so, yeah, I appreciate that. What does your t-shirt say?
Strippers are people.
I love that.
Pro stripper.
Well, actually, we got a comment on social media saying, translation, who wants a second wussy? Because that's what you'll get.
What does that mean?
They're saying, so if your man doesn't allow, like, if you don't take your man's last name or if your man takes your name, that makes him some kind of, it's demasculating him.
Oh, and, come on. That's the toxic masculinity we're working on getting away from.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I think I'm really proud of guys that are comfortable taking their female partner's last name. That's a sign of strength. Folding into, giving up and just collapsing into tradition isn't. There's no valor in that. So when people are trying to honor their wife, their female partner and all that, we should applaud that.
I feel like you do that and not to be superficial, but when someone's like very successful or a celebrity, so you want to take Lopez, if you're marrying J-Lo, you're like, I'll take that Lopez or Britney Spears, Spears or Gaga.
I would have said Knowles because Lopez is not a very extravagant name. There's a lot of Lopez.
You also know that you're a big Beyonce fan. So.
Yeah, I mean, but Knowles, you don't have a lot of Knowleses.
Or you want to be Mr. Gaga? No, I know she's. That's not her real last name.
I'll be Mr. Gaga.
I'll be Miss Gaga.
Same.
We also had an interesting conversation before you came here, Dr. Chris, about celibacy and its impact. And everyone has different reasons why they go celibate. Some for religious reasons. Some because of addiction. You know, coming off out of addiction, and then some just to kind of as they're finding themselves. What are your thoughts on celibacy and how it can impact people?
Yeah, I think it can be a really beautiful break away from sexuality. I did it when I came out of my last relationship. I was engaged and sex felt very triggering and overwhelming, and having just had really relationally deep intimate sex for a couple years, I just wasn't open to having sex that wasn't going to feel nourishing. And anonymous random hookups can be very deeply nourishing and intimate, but I wasn't willing to deal with the letdown and disappointment if I got that. Mm-hmm. So I took a break and I wanted to only have sex with people where after having sex with them I'd feel better and we could connect. And I just didn't want to run the risk of having sex where I felt misused, not taken care of, or them showing up and it not being as compatible as I wanted. So I think celibacy is beautiful. You know, being sex positive isn't about having a lot of sex and always being open. Sex positive is about honoring your sexuality, whatever it happens to be. And that sometimes means having a lot of sex. Sometimes it means having no sex. Sometimes it means putting certain boundaries around it and limits. And yeah. So celibacy can be really healthy.
So what about if you literally, let's say you're a virgin and you are honestly waiting to have sex with your partner, or if you have decided, and if you're not a virgin.
I don't support that.
If you have decided.
You don't support that.
I think you have to, right, you have to kind of try it
out. It's not even just that yet. The first thing is that we tend to devalue sexual developmental milestones, and you're supposed to accrue them in your teenage years and young adulthood. And to wait until later in life, you miss out on learning the self-esteem, the body esteem, communication, consent, body autonomy.
What's sexual chemistry?
You need to have sex.
I agree with that.
And absolutely what Ryan just said, which is please don't make any full commitments until you've explored sexuality. Chemistry and compatibility don't show up on their own. Just because you love them and are attracted to them doesn't mean sexual compatibility is there.
Because that would be such the saddest thing if you go on your wedding night.
You end up in my office.
And y'all have terrible sex.
You end up in my office saying, I love them. We got married.
Paying you a whole bunch of money.
I moved across the country. We moved in and sex isn't working out. And I say to them, good luck.
See? Yeah.
Well, you love what you hear. Well, maybe not the topic, but or maybe you do. Who knows? Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing Love Lines Valentine hookup. You can listen and hang out with Dr. Chris. We're actually going to probably stop by after our show too. He will be
I'm holding you guys to that. You better show up.
Now I just said it.
She just volunteered me to something.
We're going to be broadcasting live from the Abbey on February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. So yeah, if you're in the Southern California area, definitely stop by on Valentine's Day and
come hang out with me. I'm going to be here all night.
And come meet me if you want to.
Add that in. You can join us for a night full of prizes, specialty drinks, advice, and more. Head over to Channel Q, wearechannelq.com for more details.
Yeah, I can't wait to taste the Dr. Chris cocktail.
Yep, it's going to be
Oh, is that really a thing?
Night.
I don't
it
know. I just I wanted it to be.
It's sure
going to
be.
Honestly, that's what I'm looking for.
Okay, well, coming up.
It's real sweet.
Our Yes Queen of the Day.
Yes,
you're listening
queen.
To Let's Go There with Chi and Ryan on the new Channel Q. Now we're getting into our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes Queen.
So how important, Ryan,
are
emojis to you? Scale of 1 to 10.
Honestly, a 25, because you can say a lot of nasty things with the right emojis, honey.
What's your favorite emoji?
Oh, girl, that eggplant one, and then also the eye roll one, and then my new favorite one that I use all the time.
Yeah, go to your favorite. Go.
I'm
and this is an experiment
go.
For all of you listening also. Go to your frequently used, and you will laugh to see what your frequently used are right now.
So the ones that I use all the time is the kissy one with the heart, and then the drool one. I've been having a lot of flirty conversations.
Wow.
If you send me an emoji with a kissy heart, I'm like, no, thank you.
Wow. Vanessa,
are you
our producer,
me?
Has intimacy issues. Vanessa.
The emojis are so important on text.
So they are.
Vanessa, what are your top emojis right now?
The one with like the super smiley face, like, oh, snap, I messed up, I'm smiling.
Oh,
you
no.
Know what
oh,
I mean?
The awkward smile.
Do you like the smirk, the side smirk? The side smirk is very good if you're like flirting like really hard.
So my top, my top ones right now are the high five, the two hands like slapping, like two high fives.
Okay, like the raising the roof.
Yeah, raising the roof.
Okay,
and then the emoji with like crying, laughing.
Oh, okay.
So I'm obviously having a lot of flirtatious texts right now. Kidding.
I'm like, mines are very sexual, to be honest.
Mine used to be. There was a point where mine were, you know, there was, if you went in, you were like, oh yeah, you got the eggplant, you got the peach emoji, yeah. You got the, tongue
one,
out.
The tongue is a good one for me.
Devil. Okay. Well, this is for our Yaz Queen though. We digress. Accessibility and representation are key themes in the upcoming emoji release.
Oh, that's exciting.
So they announced a motorized wheelchair, mixed race families, and Asari are the latest characters to be added to the emoji alphabet.
See, now I love that. There's also, I saw, and you probably just said that because I really wasn't paying attention, the gender neutral couples.
Oh, no, I said mixed race couples.
Oh, well, there's that, but there's also gender neutral. So you'll have like,
nice.
Like, yeah, I love that. It's pretty great.
There's also going to be a mechanical arm, a deaf person, and a person using a cane to feel their way around.
See, that's exciting. And I think there's some also, there's a pinch one. Like, it looks like you're doing like the small, like if, let's say you needed to do a hand movement to say, to be a size queen, there's like that one's happening.
There's a pinch one?
Yeah, there's a pinch one. Like you're doing like a pinch.
Do that many people use that?
Well, I think it's going to be used in more of a shadier way if you get like the and as people say, the unsolicited penis pick people that send those, they're going to get a lot of those where they're going to be like, it's not all the way
or
there.
Like, are you into it? Not really. Right? That's like... So the characters will be added to mobile phones and computers later this year. That's from Unicode, which I didn't realize there's an actual organization that approves the characters in response to requests to become more inclusive.
Yeah, there's actually also a period emoji.
Oh, yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Period, like it's a women's menstruation.
Yeah, 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 which is awesome.
Not like a period, like a big dot.
No. It's actually meant for women so they can express when they're going through their
moment.
Yeah,
like...
Which is great. It's very inclusive.
Which that can be used in the wrong ways because, you know, when I'm mad, don't always put the period emoji. That is wrong.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, people do that and I want
to... Really?
I want to kick you in the... down there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, they're kind of already assuming like, oh, are you on your period emoji?
Yeah.
Oh, how rude.
It is rude.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. That was our Yaz Queen. Yaz Queen to Unicode. It's actually not Apple. Like, we think Apple does it all, but Unicode is this organization that does that.
Well, that's exciting. I love that.
Yeah. So congrats to them for our Yaz Queen of the day. And that does it for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, we've got a Grey's Anatomy star joining us in the studio.
Oh my God. Yes. If you think it's Ellen Pompeo, you're right. Yeah. I'm just joking.
No. False press. What do they call it?
But he's just as big as her.
Yes. And Vanessa, our producer, is a huge fan. She is
I'm dying.
She's freaking out. As long as someone is dying and is a fan, then we're doing something, right?
So, yeah, I mean, of course. We love to have great people on our show. That's what you can count on for us. You
exactly.
Know? Unlike others.
So let's go there again tomorrow on Channel Q, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. We are sending you love.
And honey, you better remember to slay because Grey's Anatomy's happening tomorrow.
Yeah, have a great night.